This is Chapter Day. I'm Jim Fleming, and I'm reading from Little Hawk and the Lone Wolf. It's a memoir by Raymond Cacatosh, published by the Historical Society Press. He was born in 1924 on the Menominee Indian Reservation near Neopit, Wisconsin. He grew up there and went to school in Keshena, but he's just about 18, and the war is coming, and he wants to get away, so he's gone to Baraboo and the Badger Ordnance Works. When I applied for a job at the Badger Ordnance Works, they told me that because I was underage, I needed a work permit. The courthouse in Baraboo issued me a form to be signed by my mother. I stopped at a restaurant and had a cup of coffee, signed the form, and took it back to the courthouse. They looked it over and issued me the work permit. With the permit in my hand, I headed for the Badger Ordnance Works and was immediately hired. The pay was 75 cents an hour, with payday every Thursday. The plant was still under construction, and that was where I worked, building reinforcements around each storehouse of ammunition. My first paycheck was $42 after deductions, and the Social Security tax was a penny for each dollar I made. I felt like a millionaire. This was more money than the lumberjacks made all month. After my rent was paid, all I had to do was head for the movie theater downtown or shop around for some new clothes. Still, on my first payday, I thought of my little sister and my mother. I got a money order of $10 and sent it to them in the evening mail. Now I didn't have much left. After a few weeks of collecting my huge profits, I had money in a checking account and money in my pocket. But I lacked something else. A girlfriend. After watching the women walk by in their silk stockings with the black seams up the back, I decided to go out hunting for one. Let's see. There was one I saw often at a restaurant. Her name was Alice. But how do you go about asking a girl out for the evening? Easy. Just go over and start talking to her. First, call her by her name. Alice? Yes, Ray. What can I do for you? Would you like a date with me? How'd you know that? I was hoping you'd ask someday. How about Saturday night? Fine. I'd like to go to the Al Ringling Theater. We'll see you Saturday night, about 7. The next day at work, I started drilling a hole in the concrete we'd put in the week before. The foreman asked me where my brains were. Well, I guess I was thinking about Saturday night, I told him. Oh, yeah? What's so special about Saturday night, he asked. With a big smile on my face, I told him I had a date with the most beautiful girl in town. He huffed, well, that explains it. Better not use the jackhammer today. You might blow up the whole plant. When Saturday arrived, I was a little nervous for the date. As I prepared, I grabbed a tube of hair cream and commenced to brush my teeth. Tasted bitter. Didn't even get my teeth too clean. When I arrived at the restaurant, I sat at the counter, and the guy next to me said, "Are you advertising, or do you always walk around with your fly open?" Alice arrived, and we walked to the Al Ringling Theater to see Trail of the Lonesome Pine, starring John Wayne and Betty Field. The movie was kind of sad and made Alice shed a tear or two. After the movie, we strolled over to a tavern just off Baraboo's downtown square. I was only 17, but had a badge from work with my picture on it. They thought I was old enough. And who cared, really? It was wartime. If I'm with a woman, some guy will always try to pick her up. As we drank our beers, a guy walked over and asked Alice who the dumb Indian was sitting next to her. "His name is Ray, and he's a lot smarter than you," she answered. "Well, I don't like smart guys," he grumbled. And like I always say, I can be minding my own business, and some guy will hit me from behind when I'm not expecting it. The man knocked me off balance, and I wound up on the floor. Alice rushed to pick me up, and I asked her who hit me. She pointed to the guy. That was all I needed to know. "You're not going to let him get away with that, are you?" Alice asked. "Alice," I said, "calm down. Church isn't over till they quit singing." I told her to move closer to the guy. "So, you're the dumb Indian," he said to me. "No, I just came to ask you for the next dance." "What?" "Well, Alice here said you wanted to dance with me." He called Alice a derogatory name. Unfortunately for him, Alice heard it and knocked him, ass over tea kettle. Alice had brothers who were boxers, and she knew how to make a fist and deliver it. Now the man was on the floor, looking up at the chandelier. I asked Alice why she socked him. "Because he wouldn't dance with you," she answered. I told her once he got back up I'd ask him again, except this time politely. The man's lip was bleeding, and he staggered back to the bar. He was about to sit down when I asked, "Now, before Alice knocks you down again, will you dance with me?" That got him going. "Why, you—" he muttered as he drew his arm back. But before he could get close to delivering his punch, I clipped him with a left hook to the jaw. He wound up back on the floor. The bartender came over and asked, "Who started this fight?" Alice pointed to the guy on the floor and said, "He did. He won't dance with Ray." The bartender looked puzzled and walked back behind the bar. Alice was grinning. "Alice," I turned to her, "that guy just doesn't like to dance." "Maybe he thinks you want to lead." "Yeah. Well, wait till he gets up. I'll show him how to do the Menominee Waltz." She laughed. "I love the way you put that." The next day, I looked in the mirror, and to my surprise, I didn't have a black eye. Then I tried to pick up a cup of coffee, only to find that my fingers were too sore to lift it. Still, not too bad for a Saturday night. I thought about how my wolf had to fight when he had no other alternative. He never provoked a fight. And I'm the same. It's another thing you can learn from a wolf. During that spring, I dated other girls, but Alice was the most outstanding. One night, I got in a fight with another woman's ex-boyfriend. The woman told me she didn't want to see me anymore. With a bleeding lip, I headed toward the door, and there stood Alice. She gave me a disgusted look and asked, "Having a nice time?" "No, that guy didn't want to dance." "You're still bleeding," she said, teasing me. I tried to smile. "Not as bad as him." "You need someone to look after you," Alice said. She handed me her handkerchief, and we headed out the door and got a cab. I told her proudly that I was a lone wolf and didn't need anyone. "But you certainly look like you do," she said. I told her that the guy hit me when I wasn't looking. "Just like the last time," she said, putting her arm around my neck. "See what trouble you get in when I'm not around?" She smiled. "Try calling me once in a while." We dated the rest of that summer and into the fall. As we sat on a park bench with the leaves falling all around us, Alice took my hand and said, "Ray, I'd like to be someone's wife." I knew then that she was serious, so I put my arm around her shoulder and gave her a little squeeze. Then I told her something I had done that would change my life. "Alice," I said, "when I turned 17, I decided to go to war."
"So you enlisted?"
"Yes."
"What branch of service?"
"The Marines."
Alice did not seem pleased.
"Of all the branches of service, you had to pick the toughest?" "Well, Indians fight a lot," I told her. I'd gone to enlist that summer, just before my birthday, but the Marine Corps said I needed my mother's consent, so I went back when I turned 18. Then the Marines had to find out if I had a criminal background, which took about a month and a half. Finally, they requested that I make an appearance at an office in Milwaukee. They told me to bring my birth certificate and to be prepared to take a complete physical examination. Anticipating the big day made me as nervous as a June bride. At 5 feet 8 inches tall, I wasn't sure they would take me. But all the doctors who examined me gave me their approval. One asked me, "You sure you want to go into the Marines?" I smiled eagerly and nodded. I passed the physical exam and was sent back home to await further orders. By late 1942, Barney Ross was making headlines in the local and national newspapers. The boxing champion from Chicago was in the Marines and had already seen action on Guadalcanal. Finally, in March 1943, I received orders to report to the Federal Building in Milwaukee. Outside the Federal Building were a bunch of draftees. A man standing there with a clipboard hollered, "Get back in line!" I asked what for. He looked at me and asked me if I was from the reservation. I told him I was, and that I was there to enlist in the Marines. That didn't go over well. "You're going into the Army, whether you like it or not," he said. Then a policeman walked up and asked what was going on. "This man here is trying to dodge the draft," the man with the clipboard accused.
"Are you with these draftees?" asked the policeman.
"No. I'm here to enlist in the Marines," I answered. "Mister, do you have papers on this man?" the policeman asked the man with the clipboard. "No, but he's from the reservation, and I have charge of him."
"Well, not unless you have his draft papers."
"Sir," I piped up,
I signed up for the Marines, and here are my papers.
Go join the Marines, said the policeman. The man with the clipboard didn't like that one bit. I'll get you for this, he promised. Once inside the building, I didn't know where to go. The place was so big I got lost right from the start. There were so many rooms, I couldn't locate the one for the Marines. Someone told me to stand in line for a physical. Just then, a Marine sergeant came along, and I told him I'd already had a physical. He looked at my papers and agreed. All you need is swearing in, he said, motioning for me to follow him. A tall man standing in line with me remarked, The Marines want men like me. He's about to become a Marine, the sergeant told him. The tall man didn't have anything more to say after that. After being cleared by the Marine recruiters, a group of us was sent to the Juno Hotel on East Wisconsin Avenue. The next day we had breakfast and then boarded the train for San Diego. We had our own sleeping bunks and meal tickets. Who could ask for anything more? On the way to California, we took the northern route, which took us through a mountain pass, drifted and blocked with snow. The engineer had to wait to get help from two snowplows, but we made it through. This trip was the most exciting and longest sojourn of my teenage life. But I was not alone. Most of the other men were also in their teens. The oldest was 20. Our trip across the country took about 4 days and nights. As we peered out the windows toward the mountains, rivers, lakes, and forests, the changing scenes seemed endless. At times I thought about my wolf, and I hoped he'd understand why I had to leave. I knew he'd be there when I got back. One day someone said, Look, that's Salt Lake. I knew we must be in Salt Lake City. It didn't look all that different from Lake Michigan. When we saw oranges in the trees, we knew we were finally in California. What a place! The warm breeze made it feel like it was the middle of summer. When we got off the train, green trucks were waiting to take us to a Marine Corps base near the Pacific Ocean, located near an airplane factory that produced B-24 bombers. Our tent area was next to the runways. The B-24 had four engines, and each engine had about 3,500 horsepower. Multiply that by four, and you can imagine how loud they sounded on takeoff. As the planes cleared the ground, we could see the pilots, and sometimes we could see them wave at us. When one of the bombers was ready for shipment, it was sent out, day or night. This meant the loud takeoffs happened a lot, and at times we had trouble sleeping. One day I heard tires squealing and saw a bomber getting so close to the fence it almost hit it. The takeoff was aborted due to the plane being overweight. Walking toward our new lodging, some boots, trainees, hollered, You'll be sorry. A guy next to me said, Ray, now's the time for all good men to get the hell out of here. But so far, I had no complaints. The weather was perfect, the food delicious, and we were all issued new clothes. Soon would come the bad part, though, the inoculations. While waiting in line, a tall man standing in front of me fell over. I tried to catch him when he fell, but I was too late, and he crashed to the floor. Someone else started to vomit, and just watching him made me feel sick. After receiving all of my shots and a blood test, I knew what it felt to be a pincushion. We all walked back to the huts, holding a piece of cotton on our arms. We were issued two oval-shaped brass tags. On each one was printed our name, with the first and middle initials, blood type, religion, C for Catholic, P for Protestant, serial number, and branch of service. Mine said USMC. We also had to have our hair cut. It was like getting scalped by a white man. But I lucked out. My barber was from Wisconsin, and after he found out I was from Baraboo, he just gave me a nice crew cut. The day after I got my shots, I started to run a fever and felt nauseous and very weak. My temperature was 104, and I was taken to sick bay. One day a nun took a blood sample, and she reminded me of the nuns at the Kashina Hospital. I wondered if the Mother Superior had trained her. I lost about 10 pounds while I was in the infirmary. Although I felt weak, after 10 days I was discharged and sent back to my platoon. The doctors recommended light duty for 1 week, and this meant I didn't have to do any long marches, calisthenics, running, and no fighting of any kind. All the guys teased me about being a sick bay Marine. 2 days after I was put on light duty, someone pushed me forward in the chow line, forcing me to brush up against the man in front of me. He didn't seem too happy about it. You did that on purpose, he accused me.
I was pushed, I replied. He took a good look at me and asked, You an Indian?
I'm a Menominee Indian.
I'm McKinney.
So, you're Irish?
That's right, and I hate Indians.
Well, I don't think too much of Irishmen who hate Indians, I told him.
McKinney demanded I meet him after supper and promised I'll show you how I can make an Indian cry.
No white man will ever make an Indian cry, I replied, rising up to his challenge.
The guy who pushed me announced loudly, Fight in the boondocks tonight!
That's when I knew he'd pushed me, on purpose.
I turned to him and he laughed in my face. Ha! I'm not worried when McKinney gets through with you. Your ass will be mud. I promised to settle with him later. A man in our platoon named Bailey heard about the fight and warned me that McKinney had about 10 professional fights, to his credit. He said, Ray, if I can't talk you out of this fight, all I can do is give you a few pointers. He warned me not to go all out in the first part of the fight. Keep my guard up, watch for an opening, don't lose my balance, keep moving. I thought at the time my wolf was being mauled by a bulldog. Colonel won that fight. I would have to be a lot more like him. After supper, as I walked toward the boondocks, I heard someone yell, Fight! I turned to see about 20 men heading my way. By the time I arrived, McKinney was already there. So, you came to see an Indian cry, he said, badgering me. I didn't answer at first and let him badger me some more. Finally, I said, I came here to fight, not talk. McKinney rushed toward me, but Bailey pushed him back. We took off our dungaree tops and were told to back off. A large circle was drawn for the space we were to fight in. Bailey motioned us to the center and told us the rules. No hitting below the belt, he said, and back off once a man is down. Oh, we sparred for a few minutes, and then I took a sharp left to the side of my face. I shook it off and started watching for an opening in McKinney's defense, but he was too sharp to let me get a clean shot at him. He clipped me again and again. I could only let him do the swinging, and I soon noticed he was getting tired. I was still weak from sick bay, but I had to get this guy, one way or another. Then I got in a good punch, and he shook his head. We threw lefts and rights at each other until I tripped and fell backwards. When I fell, he kicked me in the ribs and swore at me. Some of the men started to boo him, and then as I was getting up, Bailey stepped in and said, No kicking a man when he's down. He stopped the fight and said to McKinney, You were getting winded. He would have gotten to you if you hadn't kicked him. My ribs hurt, and I had trouble taking a deep breath. My nose felt broken, too, and that didn't help my breathing. Now I had to go and lick my wounds just like my wolf. With a broken nose and kicked in the ribs, I had trouble sleeping that night. But when you're 18, you heal fast. Bailey came over to my bunk and asked how I was doing. Well, nothing a few beers won't fix, I told him. He laughed. When we get over boot camp, I'll buy you the best drink in the house, Bailey promised. And then he added with a faded smile, Sarge wants to see you in his office. He walked with me to the drill office and waited outside. Once inside the office, I snapped to attention. Private Cockatosh reporting as ordered, sir. Cockatosh, I hear you've been fist-fighting, Sergeant said. No, sir. Don't lie to me. I know what's going on in this platoon. We were just sparring, I told him. Look at your eyes and fists. You call that sparring? We got a little carried away, sir. McKinney's a professional boxer. I know, sir. He's teaching me how to box. He kicked you when you fell. You call that boxing? Yes, sir. Taught me not to fall down. I could have McKinney put in a brig for 6 months for what he did to you. Well, then no one will teach me how to box, sir. Are all Indians like you, Cockatosh? No, sir. They're better fighters than me. Well, go back to your quarters. And no more fighting. I stepped back one step, didn't about-face, got the hell out of there. Outside, Bailey was laughing his head off. You sure told the Sarge a good line. I'm sure he knows better, he said. Come on over to the gym. I want you to meet a friend of mine. In the gym was a sergeant instructing some men. He turned and said to me, I hear you had a fight with a pro. I smiled and told him, wasn't much of a fight. I had better ones on the reservation. Then Bailey added, "He's a damn good fist fighter." The sergeant looked at Bailey and said, "They're the best kind." He pointed to a punching bag and said, "Give him all the help he needs. You need anything? Just ask." That was the start of my training. Skipping rope, shadow boxing, punching a big body bag. This was going to be fun. But I had a lot to learn. Bailey weighed about 200 pounds and knew more about boxing than anyone I'd ever met. He kept telling me to keep my head down so no punches could get to my chin. After a while, my ribs felt no pain. I was able to go through two rounds of fighting and not get winded. Not too bad for a quiet little Indian. There were times I felt like I could take on Joe Louis, the world boxing champion. Then Bailey would tell me, "Don't get cocky." He also warned me, "Look out for McKinney." "You got that wrong," I replied. "McKinney has to look out for me." Bailey trained me for about a month. Now I was looking forward to the next fight. I didn't have to wait long. One day, while standing in the chow line, I heard someone say, "I feel like kicking an Indian." I turned to reply, "That sounds like an Irishman who likes to kick a man when he's down. Maybe in the boondocks after chow," McKinney snapped. Well, this time, someone had brought two small stools from the gym for us to sit on between rounds, and it seemed like the whole platoon was there to watch. McKinney must have been planning for this all afternoon. The only thing he didn't plan on was a referee. Bailey informed him that he would referee the fight. "Any kicking a man when he's down will be considered a win for the man being kicked," Bailey warned. "Shake hands and come out fighting." McKinney refused. I smiled and said, "What makes you think I'd let you?" That did it. McKinney took a swing at me, and Bailey grabbed him and pushed him away. Then the bell rang, and McKinney charged into me like a raging bull. I had to back up as he kept swinging like it was the last round. I blocked every single one of his punches. Soon, he was showing signs of exhaustion. He seemed to grow worried as the end of the round came near. At the beginning of the second round, I got in a few hits. Nothing serious, but then my big break came. McKinney threw a hard right, missed, and gave me the opening I was waiting for. I connected with a hard right to his left eye. He started to bleed. Now it was my turn to throw a few hard punches. The cut above his left eye was leaking blood, and he kept wiping at it. Each time he did, I connected with a hit. My fist was getting smeared with blood. In the third round, we sparred for a while, and then I connected with a left cross to McKinney's nose. His head jerked back, and I knew I'd hurt him. His nose started to bleed. Then McKinney walked into a stiff right and fell backwards. Bailey came over to start the count. "Come on, fight, Irishman," I yelled. The round was nearly over. Bailey raised his hands, and I knew it was time to give this guy all I had. I peppered him with lefts and rights, and he did the same to me. We stood eye to eye, throwing everything we had at each other. And then we stopped. McKinney staggered, and I thought that this time he would fall, but then he came at me again. As I blocked his punches, I remembered how my wolf stood on his hind legs when he was fighting for his life. Now it was my turn to do the same. So with all my strength, I threw a hard right and connected with the side of McKinney's face. He went down and didn't get back up. The timer sounded, and Bailey came between us. "Fight's over," Bailey cried. He held up my arm, and the crowd applauded. Then he walked over to McKinney, who was just standing up, and raised his arm to more applause. Bailey looked at me and said, "Seems like this fight's a draw." He turned to McKinney and asked, "What do you think about that?" "Oh, if it's okay with the Indian," he replied. Bailey turned to face me with the same question. "That's okay with the Irishman, it's okay with me," I smiled. On the way back to the tent area, Bailey said, "You worked him over pretty good. Did you see that big cut over his left eyebrow? He must have run into someone's fist 3 times, I said. Bailey smiled ear to ear. I knew it was just a matter of time before the sergeant would hear about the fight. The next morning, while we were lined up for inspection, the sarge approached me, took a good, long look at my face, lowered his eyes to my knuckles, and said, "Kakatosh, you've been fighting again. You and McKinney will see me in my office after drill." "Yes, sir." When drill practice was over, I walked over to the sarge's office and found McKinney standing at attention in front of the desk. "At ease, both of you," said the sergeant. He looked at me and asked, "Private Cockatosh, can you tell me why Private McKinney's face looks like it went through a meat grinder?"
"Yes, sir," I answered.
"He was teaching me how to box, and he fell forward into my fists."
"McKinney, you agree with that?"
"Yes, sir. That's what happened."
The sergeant asked, "Private McKinney, why'd you fight with Private Cockatosh in the first place?"
"Because I hate Indians, sir."
"That will get you 30 days in the brig."
"Sir," I said, "you better give me 30 days as well, because I hate Irishmen."
The sergeant stood up and pushed some papers toward me. "I want you to sign these papers so I can court-martial McKinney for using his professional tactics on you."
"I refuse to do that, sir."
"Give me one good reason why you won't sign a complaint."
"No one can teach me how to box like he can."
At that, the sergeant dismissed us with a warning, saying, "No more fighting, or I'll get you both 30 days in the brig on bread and water." Once we were outside, McKinney looked at me and said, "You gotta be the dumbest Indian in the world." He didn't faze me. "Just 'cause I let you off the hook doesn't mean I like Irishmen," I replied.
"I still hate Indians," he said.
"Too bad. Indians were born to fight. That's why they call us warriors." McKinney just hung his head and slowly walked away. I wondered what was going to happen now that I'd gotten McKinney out of my hair. Sometimes after that, I would see him in the pay or chow lines, but he would never say anything to me. Maybe he really did hate Indians. I don't really hate Irishmen, just the ones that tick me off. In my observation, an Irishman is extremely lucky, drinks heavily, will tell you he's Irish within 5 minutes, takes unnecessary risks, is boastful, likes to fight, and is stubborn. All attributes similar to my own.
Little Hawk and the Lone Wolf, a memoir by Raymond C. Cockatosh, published by the Wisconsin Historical Society Press. I'm Jim Fleming. I hope you're enjoying the book and that you'll be here again for Chapter Day. Mm-hmm.